Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. In a moment, the outstanding Beth Mullins will join us, but first, our play-by-play call of the day that was not selected by me.
Thomas, play action. Near corner throws for Sutton, knocked away, intercepted! Amani Oluwari and the Nittany Lions win it! What a play by Amani Oluwari!
Yep, just say that three times fast and you've got the job. All right, so let's bring in the outstanding Beth Mullins, who is the tone setter on Monday Night Football with the Jets and the Detroit Lions coming up. And Beth will be working the game with Brian Griese and Laura Rutledge. Beth, welcome. It is great to hear you again.
Hey, Steve. How are you doing? Good to be on.
I'm doing great, Beth. You know, I have to ask you, when it comes to a regular season game, you've done the Raiders preseason games for years. How tough is it doing it when you've got 90 available individuals on each side?
The game board gets a little crowded, Steve. and actually, once you can turn it over to the regular season, when you've got 40 less people to deal with names and numbers and things, it's quite a big difference. You know, honestly, it's kind of cool to sort of everybody this time of year has that hope of big things to come. And all those guys, you know, that are on the cusp or that are fighting to keep their dream alive, are fighting to make that roster, you know, it's compelling to be in it and to be around camp and be around those guys and hear their stories. And you really start pulling for guys to, you know, to make it all come true because they really do put so much into it.
What was the read, Beth, you got from John Gruden's preseason as to how he handled it and you watched it play out in front of you every single game?
You know, he was so energetic and so enthusiastic and really, you know, I was around Rich Gannon a lot, who still has a good relationship with Coach, and of course, Matt Millen, the three of us all with Pennsylvania ties. It was a lot of fun. You know, Rich spent a lot of time with him and a lot of time around the team, and just he was most impressed with how much it meant to Coach Gruden to be back with the Raiders and to be back with the guys. There was a ton of turnover. He brought in a lot of veterans. I think the 90-man roster during preseason, half of it was new guys from the year before through free agency in the draft. And everybody was just talking so much about, you know, the different work ethic and the different commitment that was involved when Gruden was around and sort of that leadership quality. You know, there are certain coaches you just want to follow. You want to give them your best. And that was the sense you got whenever you were around Gruden.
What was your sense on Derek Carr and the comfort that he has with what John Gruden wants to do?
You know, from what we heard, you know, think of Gruden when he was doing his quarterback camps and, you know, he had his sort of monitor wall around him and sort of this little bunker in his office just watching tape and breaking down film. And it's my understanding that Derek set up the same thing in the tape room, just a little bunker for him to get in there. And he talked a lot about being very similar to Gruden in that, you know, that work ethic and that mentality. I want to dive into this playbook and have it so locked down by the time the regular season rolls around. You know, Steve, there's so much now in these offensive playbooks. And these guys, even when you talk about a youngster like Sam Darnold, I want command and presence in that huddle, and I want to get to the line with as much time as I can to digest what I'm looking at, to read that defense, and to see if it's go time or if we need to make some adjustments. And I think Derek is really ready and anxious to get rolling.
You referenced Sam Darnold there. You're going to see him starting for the Jets. Matthew Stafford on the other side for the Detroit Lions. Stafford has brilliantly been able to leverage the quarterback role into a big contract without winning a playoff game. And then there's Sam Darnold. I want to start with Darnold. What's the impression that you have of him? Because obviously, I mean, I saw him in the Rose Bowl firsthand, so I know what my impression is.
You know, I think we sort of knew from that Rose Bowl and really even last year, obviously he's got to clean up the turnovers and he spent a lot of time on that. I think you're going to see him a lot more with two hands on the ball at all times because, you know, what we saw in the Rose Bowl, his ability to make something when there doesn't seem to be anything there, his ability to be aggressive and to use his legs to carve out a little space and carve out a little more time to find the open man. I think the Jets sort of knew that they were going to get that. Really spending a little time watching him in camp, having a chance to sit down through some interviews. Brian Griese and I were there to do a rehearsal game with the other Monday Night Football crew. It's just this California cool with the work ethic of a guy who, you know, almost has that chip on his shoulder. I never really was the best guy growing up. I'm hungry to prove that I can be the best guy, and totally unencumbered by the fact that he's about to become the new Prince of New York City. Steve, the thing that really sticks with me is how much he appreciated being around McCown and Teddy Bridgewater and absorbing everything he could and not being distracted by anything outside the team.
Right, and you and I both know, I mean, even in our respective professions, mentors are so important. For him to be at a young age to understand how important it was to be mentored, I think does tell you something about him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, just going through his background a little bit, he was probably, according to the so-called experts, right, he was probably like the fifth best high school quarterback coming out of Southern California, and then, you know, within a year he's the starter at USC, and all of a sudden he's the number three draft pick. They're trading up to get him to come to New York. So just the progression that he's made and his willingness, I think a lot of it, Steve, comes from his family. They were all athletes. They all knew that, hey, you know, you're not special talking about it. You can become special by doing it. And that's sort of the impression I get from Sam, and his development as a player has a lot to do with the people around him and who he has chosen to listen to.
I know I'm going to ask you about Georgia in a moment, but we'll talk about a former Georgia quarterback before we get to Between the Hedges, and that's Matthew Stafford. What's the impression that Brian Griese and you have been able to form about a storyline on Matthew Stafford heading into this game?
You know, I think for the first time in a while, he's got a running game that can complement him. So, you know, just a statistic to throw out there, I think they ran like 37% of their snaps last year. That's it. So I'm interested to see how they can blend in, you know, Kerryon Johnson. I was real impressed watching him last year at Auburn. You've got LeGarrette Blount for some short yardage situations, which they weren't very good at. I think in particular the Pittsburgh game stands out, you know, making plays in the red zone. They've got Theo Riddick to throw to on third down, so I'm really interested to see how Stafford can blend that, because we know what he can do. And you know, the other thing that jumps out at me is I think within like 18 months he's gone from the highest paid guy in the league to the third highest paid in his division. So that's the speed of the NFL right now and the direction we're headed.
Oh, my goodness. That's the best statement I've heard about that from anybody all summer. You just did a game, speaking of his alma mater, Between the Hedges. Now, I've done a Penn State-Georgia game, but it was a bowl game, so I've never been to Athens. What was the experience like being in there? And then I want to ask you about Georgia itself.
You know, it's one of those places that I've always been fascinated by, and there's a certain allure, a certain, I think, drama about, you know, Between the Hedges and that Sanford Stadium, which is right there in the middle of campus, and that was the first time I had called a game there. I loved it. I thought it was terrific. It's just one of those places where there's kind of a special feel to it, and there's so much energy around that program right now. That, I mean, there were freshmen all over the field, you know, by midway through the second quarter. So it was curious to hear Kirby Smart talk about the new redshirt rule as not having as big an impact as some people might think. I think part of the reason for that, Steve, is they have so many freshmen that are ready to play now. I think, though, that's going to have an impact around the country. You can take a look at a few guys in a blowout early season non-conference matchup and possibly be able to utilize them in certain situations later in the year without taking off that red shirt or, you know, still having a chance to see him play.
Or in a bowl game.
Yeah.
I mean, they could change the dynamics of a bowl game where suddenly, let's do a Christian McCaffrey, Leonard Fournette. I'm going to forego my bowl game to work on the NFL. That opens the door maybe for a, quote, hotshot freshman that can step in and maybe bring some juice and life to a bowl game.
You know, you're right. That could actually, in some respects, almost turn into a sneak peek at your spring practice in the next year if you can utilize a lot more of those guys.
Right, and I find the rule interesting. I also think it's going to be very interesting to see how Jalen Hurts handles it, because he could play four games at Alabama, he still has, and then leave, and he still has 2 years remaining.
Yeah. You know, there's some quarterbacks around. You know, I think we'll find out more even about the Georgia situation. How much will Justin Fields play in a close game, possibly on the road at South Carolina? You know, as you know, we're in a little different era right now, and guys want to play right away. And what always intrigues me, Steve, is the confidence of some guys coming out of high school not necessarily caring what the depth chart looks like above them.
Right,
As opposed to maybe going somewhere else where they do have a legitimate shot at starting right away. So I'm always intrigued by that.
Well, I have to ask you the obligatory question, which, you know, I mean, you and I go back to when you were doing Lady Lion basketball here at Penn State. So we've known each other for a long time. You've handled every assignment with incredible professionalism, but you know darn well, while you and I look at each other as colleagues, people are not going to look at Beth Mowins the same for obvious reasons. What's allowed you to handle it with such ease, and what's allowed you to brush aside any criticism and say, hey, I know what I'm doing?
Yeah. You know, I think there are a few things. First and foremost, growing up playing sports my whole life, my dad was a coach, three brothers, all the little kids, boys and girls in my neighborhood, we all played sports. And so I, from a very early age, I never cared that I might be the only girl or the only woman in the room. Most of the time, I don't even notice unless somebody points it out. I think there's a comfort level in that. I think there's a comfort level in, you know, I've been around the game just as much as anybody else. So, you know, the language of the game, the strategy of the game, you know, I've always been very comfortable with that. Social media changes things a lot. When I'm on a college campus, that's the first question I get asked from young people. How do you deal with all the negativity? Whereas people of our generation, they want to know how you got to where you are or what
that's
what,
right.
You know, what should I do to get better? And so, I avoid the negativity at all costs. You know, there was a saying that there was a women's summit this year at the NFL Super Bowl, at the Super Bowl, and their phrase was, "Who's in your huddle?" And I really have taken that to heart. And we all have an opportunity to choose. Think the visual of the huddle. And the fans are, you know, fans out there on social media. they don't necessarily, their opinions anyways, don't necessarily matter. It's all about those guys in your huddle. That's who I concern myself with when it comes to calling a game as well. I want my teammates to respect me. I want other men and women that do this job. I'd like to try and earn their respect. And, you know, you want to please the people that hire you to do the job. So that's kind of, you know, the way I've always approached it. And you don't have to look for the negativity, the first and foremost.
Well, you know darn well in this chair, you earned that about 25 years ago. So that was a long time ago.
Oh, man. Good times. Good times in Central PA.
It sure was. Beth, great respect for your work as always. Thanks so much for the time. You're going to be terrific on Monday night. What's the next college assignment, by the way?
Actually, that is an unknown. We now is the time of year we don't start finding out until, you know, maybe the week before. So I'm hoping at some point there will be a trip to Happy Valley in there down the road.
We hope so, too. Beth, thanks so much. You'll be terrific on Monday night, and appreciate your time very, very much.
Thank you, Steve.
Beth Mowins. She'll be calling the Lions-Jets game on Monday night as part of that Monday Night Football doubleheader. Like I said, look, we've known each other for a long time. So the part about, gee, you know, do you respect her work? That ship sailed 25 years ago. Hey, come on. Okay, we'll come back with more in a moment. I mean, Jamie's out of town, right?
That is correct. Off this week, yeah.
Wonder if we should play the game, Where in the World is the Suit? Mm. As we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. May have been a dead giveaway, but I mean, the suit said, you wouldn't believe what I saw today. I saw Mission Impossible Fallout. And I said, it's a work day. Oh, well. Are you worried at all? Are Phillies fans worried? They're 4-11 in their last 15. Ethan Whitty's going to join us, the Phillies writer for thegoodfight.com, in the next half hour. Bob Flounders tomorrow. Rich Scarsella, our high school roundtable, and predictions with the King on Thursday. And Neil Coulon coming up on Friday on the Steelers. Neil is currently camped out in front of Le'Veon Bell's house. Not really.
Ugh.
Hey, this is Khalil Mack all over again. Don't want to go there. Don't want to go. You know, there's a bottom line. He does not want to go there. He's going to hold out for his money, and I don't know. It's you've got the world saying that just pay him his money, like. I don't know, $14.5 million? Not saying he hasn't earned that on a relative scale, because he's been the best running back in football over the years, so there's no question about that. And the versatility he brings to the table is impressive. There's no getting around it. And he says, look, I want to be paid like a wide receiver. Essentially, it's what he's saying. And the way he plays the game is that he plays like a wide receiver. He runs routes like a pass receiver. I mean, Jack Ham talks about that all the time, how he's able to run routes like a wideout. So, I mean, look, is on a relative scale, again, relative scale, we're not talking about all you hardworking people up and down the valley. I mean, you work hard for every dime you get. So that we've established that on a relative scale, on an NFL pay scale. Does he deserve his $14.5 million or whatever he's looking for? Probably. But again, what's the longevity of a running back in this league? I mean, the number of touches he has, to be honest with you, with the number of touches that he has during the course of a season, there is a shelf life to that. And the Steelers have to evaluate whether they think the shelf life is worth years.
Well, it's like with Khalil Mack and like with Aaron Donald when he got his big money last week. It's all about that pass rush.
Well, you know, Khalil Mack, what's interesting about what Gruden did is he dealt him to the Bears. You notice the teams that he turned down, because, I mean, Reggie McKenzie had nothing to do with this. The teams he turned down were all better teams like the Packers. Because Gruden did not want a 20 to 32 draft pick. So he dealt him to the Bears and was considering other teams that could maybe get him a top 12 draft pick. Well, guess what? The Bears have actually become pretty good. He still may end up 20 to 32. Interesting.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
For nearly 100 years, Purdy Insurance has been your locally owned, family-operated source for insurance products. With a staff of over 20 and partnerships with some of the industry's most trusted companies, Purdy has the experience and resources to get the job done. Whether you need personal, home, and auto, or complex business insurance solutions, Purdy will help you navigate through the process. Call today at 570-286-5855, or better yet, stop in their Sunbury office to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's game brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Humble's Wharf. Our thanks to Beth Mowens for being on the show today, Joe Susan, Ethan Woody in a few moments. Tomorrow, Bob Flounders, Patriot News, PennLive.com, Rich Scarcella, Reading Eagle. On Thursday, High School Roundtable. The King, of course, will join us on Thursday. And then Friday, among others, Neil Coulong from USA Today. But from the goodfight.com, Ethan Witte joins us. Ethan, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so let's start with this. They're 4-11. What is not quite right with the spacecraft right now?
Pick. They're not hitting. They're not fielding. They're not healthy. Their starting pitching's kind of gone downhill. It's not been fun. It's not been fun to watch at all.
All right, let's get to the bullpen. What are the issues that you've seen with this bullpen? Because, for example, Aaron Nola has a terrific start against the Nationals. They give that away. What's the issue been with the bullpen?
Lately, my issue has been with Kapler's use of the bullpen. And I don't want to get too critical because for a while there, the bullpen was probably the best in the National League. It was really good in July. But lately, his usage of the bullpen is just odd. He's starting to leave pitchers in who come into a high-stress situation. The other night when I believe it was Tommy Hunter got out of the eighth inning in Washington, and then he came back out. Well, you had Neshek warming in the bullpen to come in against Bryce Harper. You also had the lefty Avalon they just traded for, but we're bringing back out Hunter after he just sat. I don't understand why he's doing that. That just makes no sense. If you've got the arms to do it, to get guys out, use them. But for some reason, he just keeps going back to letting guys sit. It's what he did with Sir Anthony for a while, and Sir Anthony kind of went down the toilet for a little bit. But it's just, it's an odd usage he's doing, and I think it's, unless he's got some stuff that we don't know about, it's just from the outside, it doesn't look good.
And plus another part, too, you know, when you manage a team, you have to just not manage the game. You have to manage the season. Has there been extensive bullpen usage where maybe there are some tired arms out there because of how it was used maybe in May or June?
I think it's definitely with Sir Anthony, but in May and June, Sir Anthony kind of saved their season. It's kind of a catch-22. He saved their season when he came up and nobody could get outs, and all of a sudden he's not walking anyone, he's striking everyone out, he's not giving up any home runs. And they saw that as, let's just keep using him repeatedly. The problem is, it's his first year ever becoming a reliever. So he wasn't as used to the daily usage that he was getting. Now he's tired. And I'm surprised that at some point they didn't just get the quote-unquote dead arm period and give him some time off in the DL, but we're past that point. I mean, his usage has been, I guess we could say, interesting this year. But I think lately he's just overthinking things rather than just going with your gut. He's maybe using the data too much.
All right, let's get to the offensive part. Mikhail Franco leads this team in batting average at .267. That's not good when your leader is at .267. They have a .314 on base percentage, which puts them 19th. In other words, two-thirds down the list. What is it offensively about them that has been a problem all year?
It's, to me, there's like two approaches that you can take. You could be up there trying to look for your pitch, but you could be kind of a passive aggressive where you look for your pitch, yes, but when you get it, do something with it. It seems like with this team, they get their pitch and they're just watching it. They're just watching it go by, and it's just, I'm a big believer in the sabermetrics part of the game, but I don't know. It's just they don't have that guy like a Daniel Murphy or someone that can hit 300 falling out of bed. They don't have that guy. It's just if you don't have the personnel, it's not going to be easy for you to do that.
Rhys Hoskins is two for his last 19 to play. Look, everybody goes through a mini bump here and there. How much do they really, on an every game basis, actually need that bat to be productive? Or he, of all the guys, he can't afford to be 2-for-19.
Yeah, I mean, I think too, he might just be tired. He might be just wearing down now. It's his first full year. Yeah, he had a full year last year, but as you saw towards the end of that crazy start that he had in Major League Baseball, he was not productive. And it's the same thing. He's kind of tailing off. Maybe he's still young. Maybe that's just what he's doing right now. He's still getting acclimated to the 162 games that he has to play. In time, he'll probably get it, and unfortunately for the Phillies, they're so dependent on him that when he's not right, they're not right. So, I don't know. Maybe it's just he's tired. I think it could just be a case of he needed that day off yesterday.
Yeah, and here's another part, too. Obviously, they've got, what, the Mets right now. Oh, I mean, they've got the Marlins right now. Then they've got the Mets.
Yeah, Marlins and then the Mets. Yeah.
Now, if you're going to, in some ways, you feel like the schedule has handed you a break because you've got Marlins, Mets, Nationals, Marlins, Mets. Then you get the Braves. This should be the part where they're making hay. Now, I want to caution everybody, too. You still feel like they're a year ahead of where we thought they'd be, so I do want to at least throw that caveat in there.
Yeah, I think the other day I was listening to Kevin Cooney on the Good Fight podcast, and he was talking to John Stolness, and he made a point that I'm like sort of wholeheartedly in favor of. Let's say this year that the Nationals are being what the Nationals should have been, and they're running away with this division. Right now, the Phillies would be in third place fighting for a wild card. Would we be upset with that? Probably not. I mean, definitely not. But the fact that the Nationals came all the way back and they're not good raised the expectations for Phillies, and now that they're slumping, it's kind of it's changed perspective. But at the same time, they're just not playing well. I mean, they wouldn't be playing well for a wild card, for goodness sake, if they were only fighting for that. I mean, personally, I'd rather they win the division and be guaranteed at least three games in the playoffs than one. But they're just not playing well at all in any phase right now.
Except for the start against the Cubs, what have you thought about Aaron Nola?
I personally believe that he should be second in Cy Young. I think he's had a better year than Scherzer. I think DeGrom should win it. I think DeGrom's been the best pitcher in the National League by far and away, and it's not really, it shouldn't even be that close. It will be because, you know, pitcher wins and whatever. But it should be DeGrom and Nola and Scherzer. Maybe a tie for second, but I think he's just been incredible. He's taken that leap that no one, when he was drafted, thought he was going to be able to do. When he was injured, I believe it was last year, and came back, and he changed his mechanics. Those extra 3-4 mile an hour that he has on his fastball has completely changed the way he pitches. If he doesn't have those extra 3-4 mile an hour, he may not be more than a three, but he has it, and he's been incredible. He is an ace. Anyone who says he's not anymore just is not watching Aaron Nola starts.
Yeah, no question. Completely agree with you. Baseball is the only sport, the only professional sport, that changes the dynamic of its race for the final month of the season because you're allowed to expand from 25 to 40. Is there anybody in a specialty role, that could potentially help the Phillies in this stretch because they were called up to be a part of the 40-man roster?
Today, I think it was not long ago, they tweeted out that J.P. Crawford's up. J.P. Crawford should be playing every day, and as Drubal Cabrera should not be. It should be J.P. Crawford at short, Michael Franco when he's healthy at third, and then either Kingery or Hernandez. I mean, it should be J.P. Crawford all the time. Whether you agree, he's been really good lately in AAA, but as far as that, there's really no one else that could be that role other than to play guys where they are supposed to be playing.
Ethan, who's impressed you that when the season began you weren't quite sure about?
That's really good. I mean, a lot. Had anyone heard of Sir Anthony Dominguez before he started? Yeah. Other than the people who really follow him closely? I mean, he would probably take it. I mean, where is he going to finish in Rookie of the Year? Would he finish top three? Who knows? I mean, Aaron Nola has exceeded kind of everyone's expectations. Everyone knew he'd be really good, but this good? Nick Williams? Nick Williams has hit better than we thought. His defense is still, I mean, a little below average, but he's had a better bat than I thought he'd have.
Jake Arrieta is going to get the ball for the Phillies, maybe 9-9. There's a certain expectation that he could be also a mentoring force on this staff. Has he been that?
I think he's been perfect for the staff. He's coming into his age 31 or 32 years, so he was obviously going to be on the decline for pitching, but has he really been that bad? I think he's been perfect for the pitchers. It was kind of cool that as soon as he showed up in spring training, every shot they showed of him in the dugout, all the pitchers were around him. You know, and it seems like that's followed throughout the year. He's an intense-looking dude, but it doesn't seem as if he's not approachable. And it seems as if somebody's always talking to him in the dugout, trying to figure out this. What do you see? What could I be working on? How do you throw this pitch? I think he's been a great addition for the team. Numbers notwithstanding, you'd like him to be a little bit better, a little more consistent, but I think he's been exactly what they wanted, if not more.
I mentioned about being a year ahead of time with this group, and I thought your colleague made a great point on the podcast about that. When you look at some of the younger players, obviously they're going to be growing pains, but who do you think's done the best job of fighting through the growing pains of a young season?
I think you can look at Reese. Reese has been up. I mean, he's been quite streaky. He was really good to start the season, and then he wasn't. And then he went on the DL, and he came back, and he was really good again. And now he's kind of not. He's done it. I don't think, to me, one of the biggest mistakes this season was starting Scott Kingery in the majors. Even if they gave him the contract, you knew he was going to get paid. You knew he's going to be with your team forever. I think the fact that he just keeps plugging away and plugging away, I think his defense has gotten better at shortstop. He's still not hitting the ball. But the fact that he had to learn an entirely new position, and he's actually gone from pretty bad to not that bad, kind of below average, maybe even average, maybe. I thought he's done really good this year. The numbers aren't showing it, but everything else, I thought he's been much better than he should have been.
How do you view the race? They're four back of Atlanta right now. Atlanta has the Red Sox. How do you view the race right now? As you know, I mean, look, there's still weeks to go in this thing. So, what do you think?
I would forget the wild card. There's too many other teams. Worry about the Braves. Forget the wild card. Let's get the division. If they even if they go through this next week and a half, let's just say they're two games back. If they're not two or three games back of Atlanta when they, I think I just looked at it today. I think they play them on the 20th. If they're not two or three games back of Atlanta by then, if they're further back, I think it's over. Atlanta's just so much better than them, especially that lineup. Acuna, Albies, Freeman, they're so much better with their lineup. It's just, I think they, if they're not that close, it's over. I don't see them doing it.
One last question. It's about Gabe Kapler. You brought up earlier about usage of bullpen and so forth. And I know you're not trying to be critical at all of what he's done. How tough is it to manage, in your opinion, when the margin of error is so thin? Because they don't have a lot of offense. So the margin of error in every game is so thin. How much does that magnify any move a manager makes?
I think that's exactly it. I mean, if it's not right, you lose the game. I mean, they had to the other day bat Jose Bautista. He of the, 195 batting average. They had to bat him third just because they're trying to find some offense. If they had one, maybe two guys hitting doing anything at the plate, they would have won a few of these games, and they wouldn't be four games back. They might only be two. It's not that, you know, two games might not seem that big of a deal, but at this point, September, whatever it is, those two games matter. So when it's so close. He's got to be right on with all these things, and they're just not working. It's just not working. So if he's not making that one right move, it's backfiring on them completely.
And again, anytime you have to coach or manage with a small margin of error, everything has to be right.
Yeah, and none of them are. It seems like every move he's trying to make is not working. Which, at the same time, he's trying to make do with what he's got. He's got Jose Bautista. He's trying, but if that's all he's got, that's all he's got.
Ethan, absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for the conversation and the insight.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Ethan Whitty. He's with thegoodfight.com. We'll come back, wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Nah, game day, I don't show up at 5 a.m. Now, Roger does. Like, I've worked all week to get to my point. I already know what I'm doing. So I think Roger I don't know if Roger's ever gotten used to, because, you know, there's something I have to tape before we go out and do the pregame show. So we usually do it about 10 o'clock, and I usually walk in about 9:56. But I don't work with Tyrod Taylor. I could care less.
Not your first rodeo.
I get out. You know, Tyrod Taylor wants to get the building of five. That's fine. You know? Yeah. I mean, I was working all day Sunday on the Pitt game. So what the heck? I haven't done my thing. All right, I'm going to watch some tape tonight. I'm only going to watch 15 minutes of the Albany game. I'm not going to watch more than that. It's almost worthless watching games like that. I mean, you can see certain things. I mean, this is what I expect to see. I expect to see Pickett, who can move, and I like Pickett as a quarterback. It's a good college quarterback. I expect to see Allison as a running back. I expect to see a lot of jet sweep action. Some of it is just window dressing to set up other plays. I mean, that's what I expect to see. I'll take a look at their defense. I expect them to blitz. I expect them to put their corners on an island. You know, it's Albany. I mean, okay, show of hands. Oh, well, I don't know if I should ask this with people driving, but show of hands. How many even knew Albany had a football team? Former Penn Stater Greg Catuso, the former Duquesne head coach, is the head coach at Albany. And Vinny Testaverde's son plays for Albany. Yeah. Steelers praise Connor as Bell remains absent. Nobody knows where Le'Veon Bell is. Nobody knows. Soup might know.
Pay breakdown of $855,000 per game.
I think I'd show up.
That's how I feel. I would have thought he would have showed up to start laboring on Labor Day.
Look, this is where you lose the average fan. You lose the average fan because they can't relate to these numbers. Even though they've heard numbers like these for years, they can't relate to this. I'm holding it. They're going to give me $14.5 million. I'm not playing. I realize you're putting your body on the line. I understand that. Thus, he wants, like any of us would want, long-term security. So if you take it from the I want long-term security point of view, every fan can relate to that because every fan themselves in their own lives wants long-term security. But they can't relate to the number. They can't relate to a $14.5 million franchise tender. Now, he's going to have to take a physical. Now, Marquise Pouncey says he expects Bell to be in uniform tomorrow. All the other players are saying how much they like James Conner. They say he's a guy you can relate to and talk with. You want to know why? Because he's actually physically standing there to talk to. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Keywords 11 and 15 in Hummelsworth. Bob Flounders, Patriot News, and PennLive.com joining us tomorrow here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.